This is a BBC podcast. You can get all our podcasts and our terms of use at bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
And now we've the first in a new series about the global food industry. Over the next 3 weeks, we'll hear how branding and marketing turn relatively cheap commodities into high-value products. The story's told through three of the best examples: breakfast cereals, yoghurt, and the subject of this week's programme, mineral water. The foods that make billions.
In 1974, the Pacific Islands of Hawaii built a pipeline to extract cold water from the ocean floor. The idea was to mix it with warmer surface water to make steam and so generate power. But the plan failed, and Hawaii was left with a deep-sea white elephant. Then, in 2001, a Japanese businessman heard about the pipeline and realised that the Pacific water could be desalinated, bottled and sold to the Japanese market. Within a year, bottles began rolling off the production line. Mahalo water was marketed as a health-enhancing elixir. In less than 10 years, it's become one of the most expensive brands of bottled water, selling for more than 10 times the price of oil. Just one example of how, all over the world, bottled water has become one of the biggest success stories of the food and drink industry.
Bottled water is the most revealing substance for showing us how the global capitalist market works today.
I never thought about it as an industrialized type of product, but I guess you'd have to say, because of the processing it goes through, that it in fact is.
I think bottled water actually represents a kind of caricature of the global economy. It provides people in the developed world with 20 or 30 varieties of something for which there is no actual variety.
Bottled water is the ultimate commodity. Sourced naturally at minimal cost, its real value lies in its marketing and its branding. With exclusive access to the world's most powerful food companies, this is the untold story of the global water business, told by the people who made it happen. Twelve miles of deep blue water separate Switzerland and France across Lake Geneva. It also separates the HQs of two of the world's most powerful food multinationals. Nestlé and Danone are fierce rivals, and nowhere more so than in the market for bottled water.
They have entered China, South America, North America. They're all through Europe and in Asia. Essentially, they are fighting to become the leaders in that category.
Michael Bellis, chairman of the Beverage Marketing Corporation. It was Danone's Evian brand, he says, that opened up this battle, but Nestlé caught up fast.
When Nestlé entered the marketplace, they hit the sweet spot of the marketplace by calling it Nestlé Pure Life. They entered with the quality image of Nestlé, the name, the branding, and also captured a very high share in almost from the very beginning. It was a huge, huge success.
But although Nestlé and Danone offer similar products, their business strategies couldn't be more different. Danone's Evian water has always been sold as a high-end product with the promise of natural purity. According to Evian's worldwide brand director, Michael Aden, that means nothing added, nothing taken away.
When we talk about Evian, what we mean by purity is the fact that that little drop of water that falls on Evian is actually protected from human pollution, and then that drop of water is just filtered through the rocks for over 15 years before it reaches the bottom of that mountain, which is basically our factory. We're not allowed to make any chemical treatment or anything to that water, so the way it comes out is exactly the way nature intended, and it's naturally pure. We're selling nature in a bottle.
Evian water is packaged and dispatched to 152 countries. Last year, they drank 1.5 billion litres of it. But critics point out that there is a cost to this success. Charles Fishman is author of The Big Thirst, a book about global water resources.
Evian has to be bottled at the source and packaged, and that, of course, all requires energy. and then it's taken to a port in a shipping container, and it's put in a ship and brought over to the U.S. Most people in the U.S. don't live at the port, so the Evian is trucked from the port to a warehouse, a distribution center, and it's a tiny little miracle of the modern global economy. You can get a bottle of Evian in a little store in Kentucky, and so you have to believe that water from France is somehow better than the water they've already got to think that that's justified.
Nestlé, though, had a very different vision, harnessing technology rather than just nature. To make pure life, water is filtered to remove impurities and minerals. The result is distilled water, which is then remineralized to give it taste. Using this technique, Pure Life can be created out of local municipal water almost anywhere on Earth. So it's got a huge advantage over its rival Evian, much lower transportation costs.
Historically, Evian was the number one water brand around the world. And what Nestle did with Nestle Pure Life, they were able to develop a global brand that was not tied to a single source and could be produced around the world to capture a global number one positioning in such a short period of time.
Nestlé and Danone's battle to sell us similar products is one of the clearest examples of how, in our modern consumer world, we pay for choice. But in the beginning, there was no variety. The bottled water phenomenon began with just one brand. Its name was Perrier.
Perrier popularized bottled water. It made it acceptable, more than acceptable. It made it desirable.
Richard Wheatley, former chairman of the advertising agency, Leo Burnett. It was Leo Burnett's ad campaign that changed the consumer landscape. For example, when Perrier was looking to increase its UK sales in the early 1970s, it faced a sceptical public. Many questioned why anyone would buy water when you could get it free from the tap.
The hunch we had, which was right, that you never ever wanted to explode the myth of this was just water. We were trying to write ads that were fun and celebratory. And someone said, well, the French for water is O, isn't it? And then someone said, well, the great expression for having a good time is oh la la. And someone got out a piece of paper and wrote the headline oh la la and put a bottle underneath it. And there was the first O campaign.
The O campaign was a marketing triumph. Perrier's UK sales went from 12 million bottles in 1980 to 152 million 10 years later. Its business strategy in the US followed suit. Perrier had turned water, a basic commodity, into a market. A crucial emotional link was created between the product and consumers, and people flocked to the brand. But on the 10th of February 1990, news came through of a little problem.
The first thing I knew about the Perrier crisis was on the Saturday morning when I got the call from the States, saying, Wenke, there's nothing to worry about.
Former chief executive of Perrier UK, Wenke Marshall Foster. But the problem was worrying. Traces of a cancer-causing chemical, benzene, had been found in Perrier water. Within 24 hours of its discovery, the company decided to recall its product in the US.
I think that I cannot describe how personally, I felt about it. It was, sounded a bit crazy, it was like a baby had been torn away from me. That's how I felt. We had worked so hard and we built it so successfully.
The French company Perrier is withdrawing all bottles of its mineral water from sale throughout the world.
It follows the discovery of traces of the chemical benzene.
Tests show benzene levels at or above World Health Organization guidelines.
The Perrier recall was one of the biggest in the history of the food and beverage industry. Within 48 hours, 70% of all sparkling mineral water disappeared. Kim Jeffrey, CEO of Nestlé Waters North America.
The problem with Perrier was less about the trace levels of benzene that were in the product, more about the fact that it shouldn't be there in the first place. You know, we sold Perrier on the basis of its purity and quality, and you live by the sword, you die by the sword, and that's what happened to us.
Perrier was out of the shops for 8 long weeks, time for its competitors to circle like sharks. And as the bottled water market now expanded, it also evolved. Where carbonated water had once dominated, still water now became the drink of choice. In the age of instant gratification, it provided what people needed, exactly when they needed it. Charles Fishman again.
People in general are more and more time-pressed. We don't cook our own meals anymore. We eat prepared foods of all kinds. And there's nothing more appealing than a bottle of cold water at a moment when you're really thirsty. Cold water is, in fact, deeply satisfying when you're thirsty. But I think bottled water is one of those products that on many occasions when people buy it, what they're buying isn't the water so much as the bottle. That is, the package and the convenience at that moment.
Convenience was just the start from the industry's image makers. Pure, clean, bottled water came to symbolise the healthy life we were all encouraged to lead. It became the indispensable prop of gym life, while healthy hydration became the buzzword. And then, as bottles of water became an everyday part of the developed world's shopping list, the World Health Organization gave the industry a gift from heaven. It said that it was normal for men and women to drink approximately 2 litres of water a day, about 8 glassfuls. Whether these 8 glasses should be drawn from the tap or the bottle was left open to question by everyone except the bottled water industry.
The bottled water companies have capitalized on that notion that you needed 8 cups of water a day very aggressively. They've used that as a way of saying not just that you probably might need 8 glasses of water a day to be healthy, but if you're going to drink 8 glasses a day, you might as well drink the best water.
The link between bottled water and the health and wellness movement was a marriage made in heaven. Between 1990 and the turn of the century, global sales doubled from 50 billion to over 100 billion litres a year. The two old veterans of the beverage industry, Coke and Pepsi, looked on, green with envy.
One of the great things about global companies is they see an opportunity and they take it.
Dawn Hudson was Pepsi's North American chief executive until 2007.
Pepsi was able to say, hey, if there's a new trend emerging, I can maybe get a leg up on the competition if I understand that trend and I develop brands faster in the non-carbonated space. And so Pepsi viewed that to be a potential for it to get a competitive, broader, more diverse portfolio to improve its position relative to Coke.
And so Pepsi launched a new purified water brand, which they called Aquafina. Sugar-free, calorie-free, additive-free, they targeted Aquafina at the American consumer. This was no funny foreign water.
Evian and Perrier existed because they were European brands brought over the United States, higher priced, perceived to be part of a rich and famous lifestyle, very elite. And we thought the opportunity was to create a water that wasn't elite, that was the antithesis of that, that was mainstream, popular, fun-loving. You could say we were democratizing a European specialty product. You could also say that we were creating an American product.
Aquafina soon became America's number one brand. So Coca-Cola, unused to being beaten by their longtime rival, then launched their water brand. They called it Dasani. And they decided to steal a march on Pepsi by breaking into the European market. This was to be one of the worst decisions the Coca-Cola Corporation had ever made. In February 2004, Dasani was launched in the UK with a proposed tagline of Urban Water for the Fast Living Generation. But what Coke was less open about was the source of Dasani water.
The water industry has criticised Coca-Cola for promoting a new bottled water that's purified from the tap. Selling at 95 pence a bottle, Dasani has been launched across Britain. The company says the water goes through a rigorous filtering and is as pure as water can get.
While American consumers had never questioned purified water, in Britain, many thought that selling factory-improved tap water was a step too far.
Dasani involves a state-of-the-art purification process which makes the water clean and safe, and then we add minerals to add the pleasant taste. We were very candid about this when we launched the brand in the media.
Stefano Bononi of Coca-Cola. But the source of Dasani water was only the first chapter in its fall from grace. What happened next was quite extraordinary.
Coca-Cola is recalling its entire range of 500,000 bottles of Dasani bottled water from the British market.
The discovery of the carcinogen bromate in Coke's Dasani water in the UK occurred just 5 weeks after its launch. While the brand continued apace in the US, in the UK, Dasani was dead. To many, a huge American multinational's attempt to sell purified tap water with an apparent markup of over 3,000% was the ultimate indignity. But it also raised questions about the power of branding, the power of multinationals, and the power of the globalized market itself.
Bottled water is the most revealing substance for showing us how the global capitalist market works today. It tells us that we're no longer buying things for their use value, that in a sense we're buying choice. We're buying freedom. We're buying all kinds of insubstantial things.
Richard Wilk, professor of anthropology at Indiana University. For some of us, this choice and freedom is worth the price we pay. But for others, it's now come to represent the excess and inequality of the modern world, a world where nearly a billion people have no access to clean water at all.
One thing we cannot lose sight of is the ultimate absurdity of the bottled water industry. Here we have a world where people are dying of thirst, where people lack clean water to feed their children, and we're spending billions of dollars and huge amounts of energy moving water from people who already have it to other people who already have it.
In Britain, a small group of businessmen saw an opportunity in this inequality. If they could create a completely new brand of water, they could subvert the industry from the inside. This they did with a brand that they called One Water. There were to be no shareholders and no dividends. Instead, all profits would go directly to African water projects, like play pumps, as One co-founder Simon Devonshire explains.
The idea of play pumps came from something I read in one of the national newspapers, which celebrated this amazing invention that, you know, a pump powered by children's play that could pump water industrially into tanks and provide enough water for a whole community. And I thought that was ingenious. It can't necessarily affect an industry, though we're trying very hard, but perhaps what we can do is repurpose some of the outcome of that industry for a better cause.
With the help of major British retailers, One Water has provided clean water to nearly 1.5 million people. But it's also influenced the wider industry. One's annual turnover is less than £5 million, while that of multinational group Danone stands at almost £13 billion. That makes them powerful enough to effect really radical change. In 2005, they began to put their strength behind an ethical water campaign called Volvic, 1 for 10. The strategy was simple. For every litre of its Volvic water sold, Danone would supply 10 litres of clean water to those most in need. With the 1 for 10 campaign, the Volvic brand funded hundreds of wells and gave access to clean water to nearly 250,000 people.
On peut toujours faire plus. Mais la vraie question, c'est de gérer des équilibres.
You can always do more, says Danone's chairman, Frank Ribou. But it's a matter of balance between shareholders' interests and those of others. To those who criticize us for not doing enough, I ask, what do you do?
Très souvent, je leur demande, et vous, vous faites quoi?
Even so, as consumer attitudes changed, criticism of the industry only intensified in the West. At the heart of the matter was what bottled water was actually made of. Oil and water, the world's two most precious resources in one neat package. Writer Elizabeth Reut has investigated this phenomenon and authored a book called Bottle Mania, accusing the industry of monumental waste.
If you take all the oil that goes into making the bottles and then you add in the oil that it takes to move the water into bottling plants and then to distribution centers and then take the oil that is used sending trucks around to pick up all the empties, it is the equivalent of filling each bottle of water 1/5 of the way with oil. But bottled water has a water footprint as well as a carbon footprint. On average, it takes 3 liters of water to make every 1 liter of water that goes on a shelf. And that other water goes into making the bottles, into cooling the machinery at the plant, and into washing the bottling plant.
Attacked from all sides, the industry is fighting back, arguing that its critics are using false statistics.
You need 1.5 liter of water to produce 1 liter of bottled water. You need 3 liters to produce 1 liter of soda. You need 6 to 7 liters of water to produce 1 liter of beer. So the most efficient way to get liquid is bottled water.
Peter Brabeck-Letmate, chairman of Nestlé. The industry is also addressing its environmental impact. But in spite of its protestations, bottled water is now questioned by the developed world in a way unimaginable only a decade ago. As a result, the multinationals are now concentrating their efforts in the emerging world. Asia and South America have become the new targets for market domination. And this battle for the future of the industry is being waged once again by those old adversaries at Nestlé and Danone. Michael Bellas.
It's purely population and where the growth is. You go, as the bank robber once said, why do I go to the banks? Because that's where the money is. And when you look at the developing world, whether it's Latin America or Asia, huge growth opportunity there.
Nestlé's global brand, Pure Life, is perfectly adapted to these new markets and was launched in Pakistan before being rolled out globally. As a purified water, it could be adapted to any territory with a price point to match. Meanwhile, Danone has created separate brands for specific markets. In the rapidly expanding Far Eastern market, its biggest hitter is Aqua. In South America, it is Villa Vicencio and Villa del Sur. And in one of the world's biggest bottled water markets, Mexico, it is Bonafont. The potential for growth in these markets is huge.
As Mark Twain said, the news of my demise has been greatly exaggerated. I think that's an appropriate way of looking at what's happening with water. The need for water won't go away.
History is repeating itself. By branding and marketing water, the industry is once again transforming it from a resource that many took for granted into a product to make billions of dollars. And all over the world, a market is being created for a product that we never even knew we needed. But the final word has to go to Nestlé's Kim Jeffrey. For as he reminds us, like all products, the success of bottled water is driven by nothing more than our demand.
Some people consider the bottled water industry as a marketing trick foisted upon consumers. I wish I was that good or had that much money. That is not a marketing feat. That's consumers voting with their purchases and their pocketbooks. Consumers make the decision every day about what they want to purchase in our society.
Next week, here on the BBC, your breakfast, their meal ticket. How breakfast cereals became the first convenience foods and made billions for big business.
The Foods That Make Billions was narrated by Louise Hidalgo. The editor is Jeremy Skeet.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.